Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamada. You're listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Welcome. We're thrilled to have you with us again tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. So can I have you close your eyes? Take a nice deep cleansing breath. I'm going to clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each shaft of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come on back into the space. So I'm joined tonight by PLA and Tim and Linda. And I wanted to just say very briefly that, you know, we all kind of are here. We gather to do this radio show together to collectively be of service to everybody who's listening. And we are privileged and honored to, you know, A, be on such an amazing network as BBS, because we really love Don and Doug. They're fantastic. And they just have such a wonderful, just everything about them is fantastic. So, you know, kudos to them. And then on top of it, we're just thrilled to be able to kind of get our teaching out to people that we wouldn't reach otherwise. And the reality of it is that, you know, you can find lots of teachers out there teaching similar stuff and a lot of the same stuff and stuff that's fun to play with and all that. But there aren't a whole lot of teachers who are doing who are doing more of the esoteric, you know, deeper teachings on the public airways, you know. And we're really honored to be doing that. It's kind of, you know, we started not knowing where this was going, and I don't know that we know any more today than we knew a year and a half ago where this is going. But we've had some amazing experiences along the way, and you know, it's just it's such a privilege. So thank you for those of you who tune in, you know, week after week or whenever you can. You know, thank you for allowing us into your space, and it is truly our honor. So I think, what should we talk about tonight? I don't have anything set, and we did, you know, a lot of times what I talk about at our physical satsang here in Charlotte, I end up talking about on the radio, and tonight was different because I just, opened it up for questions. So we're having an odd week. I have, every now and again, I'll do something called an intensive where I invite people to come, and usually we do a whole weekend away, and people are able to get in a very beautiful space and spend that time in that energy with me. And we couldn't do that, so we decided to set up just a Friday night and an all-day Saturday thing here in our office. And so we're kind of gearing up for that. And so we kept satsang a little lighter tonight, and I just kind of fielded questions. So I will say, if anybody out there wants to call in with a question for me based on the work that I do, I would be happy to field those tonight. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be about anything specific. If you are new, have never heard us before, ask me whatever you feel like asking. Or if you are a longtime listener and you have certain things that have come up, you know, Pete, if you're out there, feel free to call in. You're not taking up any airspace. I think he'd feel guilty, but you're not. We'd love to have any questions come in. And I may leave it to Tim and Linda and PLAN to provide us with some questions tonight like we got during the satsang here in Charlotte. Let me think quickly if there's anything specifically. What were we talking about at the end? You tell me, because there was something we were talking about right at the end of satsang that I did want to actually bring up on the radio. Do you remember?
I'm trying to think how to say this without actually saying it. We were talking about the heart.
Yes.
And what happens when... Can I make hand gestures to you so that you know?
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. You know, and I think this is really tricky. So for those of you listening, like, this is hard. This is hard. Every week I walk this line of how much can I say and how much can't I say. And one of the things I was just saying with the people here is that, you know, the guide has to, this kind of setting is difficult because guide work is really generally one-on-one. The reason is that while the collective imprint is the same, each individual has certain imprinting that is kind of specific to them. And of course, there are many others with the same imprinting. But, you know, the thing is, if I am sitting in a room and I've got eight people here, not every one of those eight people has the same imprinting. So one of them is, you know, imprinted to do, to take one situation and function this way, and the person next to them will be imprinted to function the exact opposite way. And the challenge for me as a guide is to work with people, but not be so specific that I lead one person down the path that they're meant to walk, that will be of their highest good, and then take the other person and send them down the wrong path. Because what works for one will not work for another. And it's always a challenge. So when I get on the air and I'm talking to who knows, you know, who could hear this tonight or 6 months from now or whatever, I have to kind of monitor what I'm saying. Because the bottom line is that your spiritual work is experiential above everything else. And that's something... You know, that lock it in place now, because it's so important that you understand that. It doesn't matter how much you learn, right? It doesn't matter how many books you read. It doesn't matter how many workshops you attend. None of that matters at all if at some point that experience does not become yours. It's in the experience of it that then anything that you believe that you were taught or that you learned actually becomes yours. You know, you're here to actualize the understandings, to actualize the teachings. And how do you do that? Well, here's this is the tricky part of what I do. Because if I give you a teaching and I give you kind of all the aspects of it, then down the road, when you have the experience of it, what mind is going to do with that is it's going to question the validity of your own experience. And it will place doubt there. One of our other board members just sent me an email the other day. And my response to her was that doubt is one of the hardest aspects to see through. Because it will pop up everywhere, you know, I mean, right up until the end. It just, doubt is, has such a stronghold over the personal self. And so anywhere the mind can create doubt, it will. And this is one of the ways that it does that, which, you know, it doesn't serve you from the place of moving into actually owning these understandings for yourself. If you have the experience and then you doubt it, well, that puts us in a tricky place, right? So if I don't give you all the information and then you go and have an experience and then you bring me the experience and I can confirm your experience for you, now that's a different story altogether, right? Because you own that, you see? So this is tricky, but I'll do it anyway. So PLN is talking about, we had one of our guys here was talking about, he made a comment. He said he felt like his heart was closed. Is that how he said it? And I said, it's impossible. And he was like, okay, like, go ahead. And this is one of the things that I love to get on people about when they say, you know, my heart is broken or my heart is closed or I have to learn to open my heart. No. The heart is the God in you. You know, that's where it's seated. It's seated in your spiritual heart. That threefold flame is sitting in your spiritual heart. It hasn't gone anywhere, nor can it. And the only thing that the heart knows to do is to be what God is, right? Which is ever expansive. That's all it knows to do. However, is it true? And the thing is, you know, like, do people have an experience of being heartbroken? Sure they do. Do they have an experience that they've, you know, shut their heart down, don't allow themselves to feel or experience love? Sure. But their perception of what's going on there is not accurate. And when someone actually has the experience that I'm going to kind of talk you through, you see it so clearly that you'll never make that mistake again. From the perspective of just kind of the average person, the energy that they will feel in their heart area can appear as though it's coming from the heart. So this particular guy at our session was saying that it felt tight, and I was like, beautiful. Where's it coming from? You know? And he said, well, it feels like it's coming from in my heart. And I was like, no, it can't. It's impossible. And he was like, you know, like, what do you do with that? And the thing is, it's so subtle. So what you have to keep in mind is that the body, which is made up of elemental consciousness, okay, has like an agreement with the consciousness that's using that body to perfectly reflect the state of consciousness in the body and through the body. So it can't lie. The body can't lie. And we all know, you know, there have been enough studies done and all how people who, when they hold on to lots of hatred and things, they end up with disease, right? You know, they get cancer or whatever, heart problems, and when they're holding pain and this, all this stuff. Okay, so that's good. What you can't see is how identification itself, just the identification, functions around the heart. And this is such a beautiful experience to have. And I will never forget where I was standing when I had mine. And this is the beauty. This is how this work is. You know, it's so experiential that when you have the moment that even if you've heard the concept before, right, you've been given the teachings, you've been given the understandings, and maybe you thought that you had the experience before, but when you actually have the experience, you will never forget it. you just won't. I mean, you can go back in that moment. It's like it's right there. And so that's what this one was for me. And the thing that happens is that when identification occurs, okay, so from the space of quantum physics, we know that what is projected out from consciousness, right, from infinite possibility, what gets projected out and becomes your reality is based in the senses, okay? That's what brings it into form is the senses, all of your bodily senses. And it's an interesting thing that when identification occurs, and this is going on in a very subtle way all the time, but we'll take it and explode it out a little bit. So when let's just say when identification occurs because you, I'm trying to think of a good example. Say you have an experience and you feel that you were betrayed by somebody. Okay, it wouldn't matter who, but someone you're close to, and you feel they betrayed you. In that moment where you feel the betrayal, there's an energetic that's going to occur, and that energetic is specific. Well, in a general sense, it's going to do something to the heart area, okay? And this is where a lot of people will feel, especially if it's someone they love, you know, they'll feel pain. They could say they feel pain around their heart. And if you can get someone... And I would say for all of you listening, do this on your own. This is a beautiful exercise. Go into pull up a memory of something that has happened to you that was extremely painful. And watch, slow it down, like run it in slow motion, you know, as if you're your memory is like a projector and you can slow it down, run it in slow motion and feel the energetic that happens in the body as you're walking through it. And when you move into the space where you actually feel the pain, and if you can really slow it down and you're very astute, right? And this is very advanced work. This is not for just someone who's like never been in touch with their energetics in the body at all. You have to have a level of that kind of under your belt. But if you can get in there and look, you're going to see that there's something very specific that happens. What happens is that energy comes in and it actually wraps around the heart. And as it wraps around the heart, it constricts at the same time, like a boa constrictor. Oh, I never put that together. So there it is. So have the image of a boa constrictor wrapping itself around your heart and squeezing. That action is the action energetically of identification. That's it. And so when I say it's happening on a very subtle level at all times, I am not kidding. And that was the experience that I had, was seeing how subtle it was. I knew what it did because I had gone in and I had seen it myself, right? I had been walked through the exercise by my guide, you know. So what's happening and where do you feel it and what does it feel like? And I saw it. And the question was, where is it, right? And what I saw was, it's around my heart. And that's exactly what it is. It's around the heart. The heart can only expand. The heart can't shut down. That's like saying, you know, God would shut itself off from anything. That's just not going to happen. It's impossible, because that would be assuming that there's some outside God that can do that. Remember, you are that. But this is what happens. So the greater the personal, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the greater the personal affront, the stronger the energy of that constriction and contraction manifests in the body. Okay, the more identified you are with it, the stronger you'll feel it. So I was standing in my driveway one day. It was summertime. And I live in the South. You know, it's hot. You have to water your flowers and stuff like every day. And I was standing out in the driveway in the morning, watering the plants. And what I don't remember right now is what actually caused it to happen. Oh, I know. It wasn't even anything. I was just standing there watering the plants. And in the moment, I just became aware of the joy that I felt. that was just kind of emanating from within, just there, you know. And as I looked at that, I also looked at the concept of the constriction. And in that moment, I saw it and I felt it come in, and it came in like a whisper. I mean, literally, like energetically, it was like this little whisper around my heart, just this little teeny, teeny, teeny thing. But I could see it, and I was like, oh my gosh, like what I saw. And it was so clear. It was, this is what everybody is walking around with all the time, and they have no concept, you know, no clue that this is going on, that there is this level of constriction that is compressing itself around everyone's hearts, and they aren't even aware of it. You are so used to it that you can't even feel it. You feel the big things, right? And then when that space of whatever just occurred that was a big traumatic thing goes away, then you feel good again. But that isn't even accurate, because that constriction in that very subtle form stays there. And it is very subtle. So what I was saying to this student, you know, during our session earlier was, you know, find that. And when you find that and you have that experience and you really see it, it changes everything. You see, because you can use the body as a guide. You can check in with the body. You know, what's going on in the body? Look for it, feel it. And that's one really beautiful way for people, if they get stuck in a space and they're like, I don't know what's bothering me. I don't know. Find it. Feel it. Where is it located? You know? And a lot of times if you go in through the body and find it there, you'll be able to relate it to whatever the story is, because there has to be a story. Without the story, it wouldn't be manifesting in the body. You see? It's a good way. Not everybody, you know, some people are so keen with the intellect, they really can go in and go very deep using the intellect, right, to get down in and find it. And some people just do better feeling their way through it. And one isn't any better than the other, you know. They're both there to use however they need to be used. But it's a really good exercise. I would highly recommend it for anybody, because when you really see it, oh my gosh, like that's what's going on. I can feel it. There's this, like I can feel it. It's like something's pressing in on my chest. There's something squeezing around my heart, you know, and that's the story. That's the identification with the ego. It's right there. It's right there. And see, so that's what it does. It constricts the heart so that you don't experience what you actually are. You know, you're in there all expanded out, but it gets constricted. So it's not that the heart stops doing what the heart does. Doesn't do that at all. It doesn't shut down. No, that just wouldn't even be possible. But the identification can be so multi-layered and so strong that it makes you feel as though you aren't in touch with your heart, right? I mean, the bottom line is you are your heart, so it's kind of ridiculous to say I'm not in touch with my heart. Is it true that the personal self is not in touch with its heart? Well, sure, and it never will be. Really, right? Because what is the heart? The heart is something that transcends the personal self. Yeah? Okay. Any questions about that? No. You're not going to help me tonight, are you? Okay. Anything else that came up in the thing that I should talk about tonight?
I actually have a question.
Okay.
So, during the physical satsang session that we had, you were speaking of awareness and awareness outside of the observer and the questioner. And I'm not really sure what my concept was of awareness, but what you said made me think of something that I'm experiencing just like within the past day or so. With this whole exploring everything and being in process. But it made me think of, I noticed that, okay, for example, I was driving and there was this truck in front of me And I noticed that I noticed something, and then all of a sudden mine had a whole comment on it. And then I told mine, I was like, shut up. Like, I already knew that. You know what I mean? Like, it. So this truck had like a taped window, but I really thought it was part of the design of the truck. And like in a split second, I realized, oh, it's taped. But then mine had to go, oh my goodness, like that's taped. And I thought this and I thought that. And I was like, mm-hmm. Be quiet. Like, I knew that. Like, why do you have to comment on it? But when you said what you were saying before. This is me watching my thoughts.
This is why they say that there's a fine line between schizophrenia and deep inner work. You're going to scare people away.
Well, I'm watching like all of my thoughts and everything. But I noticed that there's like an aura, like there's something past, I guess the commenter was the observer, right? But there's something that even happened before that was mm-hmm. already like, boom, I know it. Mm-hmm. There didn't have to be any commentary to follow
that's
it.
That's right.
So is that awareness?
It's another level of awareness. That's not exactly what I was referring to when we were talking earlier. That's not okay. The same thing. But what you're looking at is really profound, because people rarely get to that. Because see, the thing is that there's the personal self, right, that has its personal commentary. And the way I look at it is that there's an interpreter, right? There's an interpreter there from the level of the personal self, and it interprets everything from the space of its own story, right? And then there's the objective observer that also functions as an interpreter, but it's capable of interpreting outside of a personal story. So it is objective, right? And that's so the initial comment of, oh, the window's taped, that's the objective observer. And then it's still part of lower mind. It still is. It's part of the personal self, but it's still part of lower mind, okay? Put it that way. And then, you know, then the other story came in. But then the shut up, that's not the observer. The shut up is just another role the personal self is playing, because remember, it plays all of it. So it can have this, you know, chat with itself all the time. Yeah. But even you can, and this is something that they do in like Advaita work all the time, is to get the seeker in a spot where they can see and recognize that something observes the observer, because there's something that observes even the observer. So that can't be you. You see? If there's a witness to the objective observer, that means the objective observer isn't you either. And in Advaita work, to my understanding, that's kind of where it stops, because it hits the wall there where it can't go further, right? The witness, there's just the witness. It just can't go any further than that.
So can you then advise us what is just awareness?
Yeah, because awareness wouldn't entail a story at all. See, the difference is witnessing, there's no witness in pure awareness. Witnessing means that there's still something that's, now pardon the way I'm going to say it, but I think visually it makes the most sense. There's something like outside of you to be witnessed, yeah? So the truck, witnessing the truck and, oh, the window's taped. Right. That's a story. There's something going on there. And pure awareness is, it's not witnessed, because you are that. She's laughing at me now. She doesn't want to say. What do you say? But that's it. You are that. if you are that, who's there to witness what that is and who you are? There isn't. There's no observer. There's nothing to observe when the only thing awareness is all of it. All of it is the awareness itself.
That's a hard one to wrap your head around.
You can't. You can't. Yeah, you can't. Good for, really, really good for contemplation, though. Really good. Really good.
So that's not something that you would normally just, well, for most of us, we would not experience it walking around day to day. It would maybe be something we would attain more in meditation or something like that.
At the level of pure awareness, this entire reality would dissolve. It would have to. It would have to. Because the reality is based on polarization, and it's based on there needing to be a witness. When the witness disappears, what's left? You see, the world is the projection of your consciousness. Right? So what happens? What happens when that consciousness that's identified dissolves? The world dissolves with it. There's no projection anymore. Linda, you're looking very... I can't hear you because I got my things in.
Say it, nothing. Can you have moments of that type of awareness?
A little louder. Just walk, talk into it, honey.
Can you have moments of that type of awareness?
Pure awareness?
Yeah.
Not that level. I know what you're saying.
Okay.
But as just the witness, yes.
Okay, where everything just kind of shuts down. You don't feel like you're a part of anything, mm-hmm. that you're just... existing or even that word doesn't suit the experience.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. But the difference is that coming out of that experience, the ego reformed, right? Yeah. And then the personal self kind of runs again. Yeah. So there's a moment after like the full dissolution where the ego doesn't reform ever again. She's sighing over there. I don't know what to make of that.
It makes me wonder, though, like how like you and Atona, like, what do you see?
I can't speak for Atona at all. Of course. Of course. You know, and I wouldn't even try. I wouldn't even try. And I don't know how to, I don't know what kind of, I mean, what do I see?
Yeah, like, I mean, I know, like, okay, so you were saying if you were pure awareness, right, that there's no projection. So,
yeah, but that doesn't function here.
Pure
awareness can't function here.
Oh, I was, like okay, that. All right, that makes
the world dissolves, right? It dissolves. There's no polarization in pure awareness. There just isn't. Who would be there to recognize that it was polarized? No one.
That's why I was like, what do you see?
Now the one who's functioning outside of ego would see the world much as you see it, just without any of the concepts in place. I mean, it doesn't mean they don't see a lamp in the corner, right, that you see. It doesn't mean that at all, because the projection here is the projection of the collective. Remember, you and the collective are the same thing. There's only one. It's singular. And it is you, but not you, the personal you. You are the collective. It's the same program. It's the same thing. There's only one program, and that one program has split itself up to look like it's multiple programs. It's not. It's one program. Just as God, you know, individuated itself into all the different aspects of the I am, right? So that it could experience itself. Well, you've got the same thing happening here, just in a polarized space, in the shadow space. So you have the lower mind that is singular, right? Expressing itself through the individuations of all the everything that you come into contact with. So you are all of it as the lower mind. See, everyone, this is the part that, again, it is very difficult. Even though it all is lower mind, it's still hard for the mind to wrap itself around this piece. But this is a really important piece, because you think the world is, you know, happening to you. You hold everything separate. There's nothing separate from you. You're all of it. And then what trips people up is like, well, if I'm all of it, there's Tim sitting over there and he seems to have different opinions about things and, you know, different life experiences. And I don't know anything about that. And so how could he be me, you know? And if he's me, that means he doesn't even exist. But yet at the same time, you're teaching that everyone has their own unique, you know, their construct of the rays of light. And like, and it all gets really jumbled up in there, right? So it's one of those things where you sit in contemplation of a lot. That your experience as an individuation is, think of it as like it's the microcosm of the macrocosm. The macrocosm is the collective. And if you take that down in scope, you get to you. It's like a holograph. Or a fractal. It's like a fractal. You understand fractals, right? You could take one piece. No, that's a holograph. I don't know what I'm saying. The holograph, you could take one piece, and one piece will show you the whole thing. Correct? Isn't that the same with a fractal, too, though? Yeah. Okay. Pick one. Whatever makes sense to you. But it's the same thing. And the thing is, you can't get... I remember one time Atona had said, we were talking about... Seems like we were talking about quantum physics or something like that. But she had said that that's the piece, is like you can't back up enough. Like, let's say it's a fractal. You can't back up enough to get the big picture. So you only have this little like spotlight reference point where it seems to look like a certain thing, right? And it seems to look like everything is separate. But if you could back way up far enough, you'd see it as the whole. And you'd see that you were actually the exact representation of the whole. But you don't experience that here. So when we get stuck in the thought of, well, this is a projection and it's all me, we think of it as me, the personal me. And it is, but it's also the collective. It's the same thing. So collectively, we've all agreed on what things look like. That the walls here are purple, you know. That's collective, but that collective is singular. We should call this like brain games night. But it is, it's singular. That's why I think it's in, I think it's in A Course in Miracles. And I only say that because I've heard it referenced to that. I've never read A Course. I've read a little teeny bits and pieces. But I think it's in that Jesus was kind of quoted as saying that, you know, my paraphrasing is probably atrocious. So, you know, don't mind that. But basically saying, you know, like the importance is to do your own work. Because when you wake up, everyone wakes up. In essence, is what he was saying. Well, that's why. Because you are all of it. There's nothing more important than your own awakening. Because when you wake up, everyone wakes up with you.
Now no one has anything to say. They make it so hard on me sometimes. Any other time, you could be sitting in a one-on-one session with someone and they just will not stop talking because they have so much that they need to unload on you. And then you get on the radio and no one has anything to say. Or you get in satsang and like one of our guys tonight, you know, the energy's so good. He's just like high on the energy and then finds he had, his questions are gone. I get that. Okay. So again, if you happen to be listening, you do want to call in a question, please feel free. Okay, so what else can we say tonight? How are we doing time-wise? I have no sense of that, as usual.
We have about 10 minutes left.
Okay, super. Okay, let's see. Come on, students. Come on, Tim.
I don't have a question per se, but figured I'll just use stuff from what's been happening in my life lately. So I've been noticing that in the past, you know, I believed I could just sort of like, you know, not really meditate my way to enlightenment, but just sort of like think about stuff and I actually have to do anything about it. And lately I've been discovering that that's not accurate. You know, you actually have to do stuff. And, you know, so Socrates, you know, he's, you know, said stuff like, know thyself, you know, and all that. You know, but I've been noticing you actually have to, like, do something in your life to live, to even have something to know. So I've just been discovering that if I, just the more I'm living my life, more like a full life and not trying to hold back or, you know, act like even anybody else. Like I have these experiences and like I'm actually learning a lot from those experiences. Like, you know, I, you know, dated one woman, you know, and she was very affectionate, you know, and then we broke up and dating somebody else, you know, and they're not anywhere near as affectionate. And so from dating the next woman, like I'm learning things that pertain to the other woman that I just couldn't even see, you know, while I was seeing her. And it's just been kind of fascinating just experiencing things like that, just living life. And it almost seems like a yin yang kind of a thing where, you know, I could have learned my lessons the first time, but I just couldn't see it.
This is brilliant because I'm gonna make him actually specify because this is a really brilliant example of how you have the opportunity when something comes to you to do the work on the inside, right? And then have it cleared so that it doesn't have to come to you from the outside. Now remember, your inner world and your outer world are the same thing. Okay, they're the same thing. So you always have the opportunity first to go within and to look and to dissolve it out there. But if you are in resistance to that, you know, for however long, and I couldn't even tell you what determines that, at some point the lesson has to come to you in the outer world and in a way that you can't kind of miss it. And then you have to deal with it there. So this is a nice example, I think, of how that worked for Tim, and he just saw this past week. So this is a good one. So go ahead, Tim.
What you want the full?
Give us the story.
The full story. So
the abridged version.
The abridged version. So I'm dating this woman, and she's just very affectionate, and you know, and I'm kind of, you know, I've been reserved, you know, most of my life, and you know, so she's just very affectionate, and I just couldn't really respond to it, you know, because I've closed myself off. You know, so we eventually broke up for, you know, other reasons, you know, but that was, you know, one component, you know, she just didn't feel as close, you know, to me.
And it wasn't for a lack of you wanting to be close.
No, not at all. Like, I wanted to, you know, but it was just hard to actually function from that place because I just wasn't there. I wasn't letting that in. You know, so now that I'm dating the other woman, the new woman, she's just not as affectionate at all, you know. And so I can just tell, I don't like that, you know. And you know, but I'm actually getting what I am, you know. And so it's like it's being reflected back to me, so I can actually see this is how you are, you know. And it's like I don't like this, you know. But it actually, even though I could have seen it on my own, it was just too hard to actually to look at it, you know, because it was me, you know, and it was just painful to actually look at it. So, you know, it took a breakup, and then subsequently, you know, dating somebody who was like me to actually see what I could have been at any point in time seeing myself. But I just couldn't, just didn't have the will or the strength to look at it.
And so what do you do now?
Now I have to change. I have to be more affectionate, you know, not even just other people, just with me, you know, actually let what's within me come out, you know, and not, you know, put up the barrier, you know, that I've been so used to putting up, you know, not waiting for like, you know, the next woman or waiting for somebody else to do something different. Like I have to actually change, you know, not even trying to put any expectation on the other person, you know, what they're going to do. You know, so I get it now, you know, the whole Gandhi thing, be the change that you seek and all that. Like, it's real, you know, it's not just words. But I used to think it was so out there, you know, like, oh, yeah, if you want to end poverty and all that stuff, be the change you seek. You know, this seems almost so minuscule as compared to, you know, leading people out of, you know, slavery or something. But it's the same thing. You know, like I have to actually change.
And isn't it still a form of slavery, right?
Yeah. It's a mental slavery because I can't actually really function. I guess that's what they mean by freedom. You know, like this word leads you to like freedom, you know, because I'm actually enslaved in my mind, you know, where I can't actually function.
And that's beautiful. And let me just say really quickly, you bring up the word freedom, and it's funny that you do, because I was just talking about this a week or so ago, that, you know, there is no freedom here. It does not exist, and it never will. That's something that people do not want to hear, but boy, for all the fighting for freedom we do, it can't exist, because just the state of identification alone is a form of being enslaved, right? Remember, when functioning from the level of the personal self is it's unconscious. You're a slave to the program. Your consciousness is a slave to the program, period. Not any different than in the Matrix movies when they're all, you know, in those weird cocoony things that they were in, right? But their consciousness was tapped into this alternate reality. They were a slave to that program. Well, you aren't any different. And the only way to experience freedom is from outside of the program. That's freedom. That's the only place you're going to find freedom. Because any other concept you have of freedom here is not, it's not true. How can you actually be free here? You know, there are a lot of people who do talk about that on the level of, say, within our country. Like, that's the big joke, is we'll give people a taste of freedom or get them thinking that they have freedom, the freedom to choose, to pick their presidential candidate or whatever, and then they really can't see how they're enslaved. Well, that's very true. But again, that's macrocosmic, and take it down to the personal you. And you're just as enslaved, you know, and as Tim was just sharing in his story, here he had the thing that he's craved his whole life, affection, right? The one thing he didn't have that he has wanted forever, he finally had in a woman, and he couldn't step up and give it back, right? Because the programming was so strong. And so he was enslaved to that, you know, even though it was right in front of him. There's no freedom there. There's no freedom there. So now he has the opportunity to turn it around, right? And it won't be comfortable for him. don't think that just because he saw it, now all of a sudden he's going to be walking around giving everybody hugs, because that's not going to happen. It's not. It's going to be a process for him to really open himself up to people, and to, you know, to this the new girlfriend, and maybe she's going to receive it beautifully. Maybe she's been waiting for the same thing, or maybe she won't. Who's to say, right? Who's to say? But it doesn't matter. The fact is that if he wants this thing in his world, he has to become that thing in his world, right? And then it's the resistance. Any form of resistance is going to keep the whole dynamic in play, right? So that all has to drop. The story itself has to just drop, and he has to be what he is. You know, he is a loving, affectionate person, but he has to allow himself to show people that he's a loving, affectionate person. And so it won't be comfortable, but that's his challenge, right? That's where he'll move into another level of his own mastery in doing that. And then allowing whatever is going to be, but being true to that aspect of himself. You know, he was only reserved because that's basically what he was taught to be, you know, and then he did it for a lifetime because he never questioned it. Well, now he's in the space of questioning it, and now he gets to go deeper and deeper with it and see how it actually affects him in his life, and see where he withholds himself in his life, and see where he doesn't get to experience the world as fully as he would like to because of that reserved nature, right? And so he gets to come into the understanding that it's all emanating from him. It's nothing that's going on in the outside world that's causing him not to feel affection, right? It's all him. And then when he gets affection, he pushes it away because he's addicted to the program. And this is how you break the addiction. You know, you see it, and now you take different steps. You got to break it. Just seeing it isn't enough. You got to break it. So now you start moving from a different place, and you have to be committed to doing that. It's really important. You have to be really committed to doing it. That's where a lot of people fall short. You know, they see it and then they know what needs to change, but they aren't committed enough to actually make the change and to make the change long term. And that's the challenge. Okay. All right. So we have a meditation to go into. And enjoy it. And then we will be back again with you next Thursday night. We also, in case you ever want to hear a repeat, I have to say this, in case you ever want to hear a repeat, we do a repeat of tonight's show next Wednesday night. What time? I forget. 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern?
Times, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we also have our programs are downloadable on our website for free. If you want to, you know, store them all on your hard drive so you can listen to them over and over, which I highly recommend, of course. And that's at theshambhalacenter.org. And I guess go to the shopping cart and then you can do all that stuff. You'll have to just create an account, but no big deal. Okay, so we're going to go into meditation now. You all have a fantastic week, and we will be back with you next week. So much love to you. Good night.